Downloading 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Your hosts this week are Stephen Scott, Sean Preece, and Tim Schwartz.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk, our first episode of 2018. I'm Stephen Scott, and with me this week, as always, are my trusty guests. Well, guests. Sean Preece is here. Happy New Year, Sean.
Happy New Year, Stephen. 2018. It's like living in the future, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, because before that, we were living in the past. Incredible. Right. And with us also, from Life After Blindness, it is Tim Schwartz. Happy New Year to you, Tim.
Happy New Year, Stephen and Sean. Yes, the future is here today.
2018, here we are. And another year of Tech Talk. I don't know how we've managed it, but they've let us come back for another year, which is incredible. There's so much to cram in here. We are going to be talking about the big news about Intel, of course, and ARM and AMD. Basically, if you like your chips, and I don't mean the ones that we eat, but microchips that are actually inside computers, well, you can like them, but they might turn against you one day. We'll explain why. Also, Apple have been slowing down their iPhone. Breaking news!
I knew it!
Yeah, who'd have thought? And we've got the latest, of course, in the world of tech news. We'll bring you that. And as I mentioned earlier, your emails. Claire's back as well with more Potter's Picks for the new year. And we've got a brand new segment giving you some top tips. We gave it a great name. It's called Top Tips. So there you go.
We workshopped that one for a long time, I can tell.
I think that was a Christmas Eve one, if I'm honest. But yeah. But let's get right into it. There's so much to talk about this week. But I have to start with a big story, which happened at the end of last week, and that was where it was reported that a flaw in computer chips made by Intel and other tech firms could allow hundreds of millions of PCs to be hacked. But what does it mean, and should we be concerned? Well, here's what you need to know. So, what's happened? Well, researchers have discovered some gaps in the way microchips have been built. That means hackers could access your privately stored data on your computer or network. So far, though, no data breaches have been reported. There are two separate security flaws known as Meltdown and Spectre. Now, Meltdown affects laptops, desktop computers, and internet servers with Intel chips. Spectre potentially has a wider reach. It affects some chips in smartphones, tablets, and computers powered by Intel, ARM, and AMD. So here's the big question. How big is the problem, and should we all be concerned? Well, according to the UK's National Cybersecurity Centre, the NCSC, we shouldn't panic. They say there's no evidence that the loopholes have been exploited. However, they say that since the issue has come to the surface, hackers may now choose to take advantage of this news. There are rumours that tech companies have known about this problem for years, but kept it under wraps to avoid panic and to get the problem resolved before it was talked about publicly. That clearly didn't work out very well. Now, let's be honest here, there are roughly 1.5 billion computers in use today, as desktops and laptops combined, and around 90% of them are powered by Intel chips. This means exposure to the Meltdown bug is potentially huge. But what information is at risk? Well, the bugs allow hackers to potentially read information stored on a computer memory and steal information like passwords or credit card data. So, what can we do? Well, device makers and operating system providers have had time to try and fix this. They are pushing out security updates or patches which protect your computer, tablet, or phone against a breach that uses the Meltdown vulnerability. It's advised that users install these updates as soon as they are made available. Microsoft, Apple, and Linux, the three major operating system makers, are all issuing patches. Apple has said that all Macs, iPhones, and iPads are affected by Meltdown, but Macs running the latest version of macOS, numbered 10.13.2, are safe. The same is true for the latest iOS version, 11.2, which is used on iPhones and iPads. Apple said it will release updates to mitigate against Spectre in the coming days. Microsoft released an emergency meltdown patch for Windows 10 on the 4th of January via Windows Update. This will subsequently also be applied to Windows 7 and 8 machines. However, users with third-party antivirus or security software should also check that this has been updated first in order for the Windows Update process to install the patch. Google said Android phones with the most recent security updates are protected, and users of web services like Gmail are also safe. Chromebook users on older versions will need to install an update when it comes. Chrome web browser users are expected to receive a patch on the 23rd of January. Cloud services for businesses, including Amazon Web Services and Google Cloud Platform, say they have already patched most services and will fix the rest soon. The Spectre bug is thought to be much harder to patch, and no fix for it has yet been made widely available. Some researchers have claimed that any fixes could slow down computer systems, possibly by 30%. Intel, though, are saying these claims are exaggerated. It says any performance impacts are workload-dependent, and the impact for average computer users should not be significant. News about the bugs comes at an awkward time for the industry. Of course, CES, the giant consumer electronics trade show, has kicked off in Las Vegas. Many attendees will be wondering how the new products on display will be affected, and marketing materials detailing speed increases will likely have to be revised. Experts also think that because Meltdown and Spectre reveal fundamental flaws in how computer chips are designed, there will have to be a serious rethink about how such technology is made in the future.
Well, thanks for that, Stephen. I think that gives us a bit more of an understanding of what we're looking at here. It's been interesting to watch this story sort of grow and evolve, because when it first broke, it was Intel chips. Oh my God, there's this big security flaw in there. And then it was Apple iPhones and iPads and Macs. Oh no, there's trouble with them too. And it turns out it's basically anything with a computer chip. It's Intel chips, it's ARM chips. It's just a fundamental flaw in there. And to be honest, there isn't that much that you yourself can do about it. It's all about, as it always is, making sure you've run the latest updates and the latest patches. And that's pretty much all you can do. It's out of our hands.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. As long as you've gone in and made sure that you have the newest, most recent update, whether you're running Windows, Linux, Mac, whatever your operating system of choice is, all of them have updated to this point to make sure that this has been taken care of. But the mere fact that it happened and actually has been happening for a number of years behind the scenes is kind of scary, guys. But at least, you know, they did get on this, and all the all the operating system companies have taken care of it. But you know, it has just been very interesting to watch this whole thing unfold and listening to different people try to explain it and try to understand it.
I think the explanation's been the hardest bit, because when I was listening to the story at first, I only heard the story off the news. I heard it come on the news on the hour on RNIB Connect Radio, actually, and I heard them saying Apple have announced that all their machines are affected by this. And, you know, there's an anti-Apple guy in the room, because there always is one, and he's sitting there going, ah, see, I've told you. Yeah, you always thought that they were safe. And I'm thinking, hang on a minute, that can't be right, because they mentioned Intel. So, I did my research, and I thought, hang on a minute, this is actually not just Apple. I mean, Apple did announce that it had affected all of their systems, but then it also affected all Microsoft systems. It also affected all Linux systems. It also affected every system, basically. Yeah. One question I've got, though, and I don't have an answer to this one yet, is what about wearables like smartwatches or smart tech? What about our Amazon devices? Are they affected by these? I mean, is it different chips in there?
Presumably they will be, because if it's an ARM processor flaw as well, I mean, these mostly use ARM processors, so I would assume so. Like you said, actually getting some information as to what these are, after getting past the headlines of everyone should panic, it's hard to get the details of what these are. These, although this has been in the design of the chips for years, there hasn't been an exploit. No one's actually used this to hack anyone as far as we know.
No.
So, you know, this is a preemptive thing to before anyone, because obviously all the hackers now will be looking to exploit this.
Well, that's what I said in the report, you know, that this is actually now a concern, because the hackers now know this exists, this loophole is there, it could be used. And that is a fear. It really is. I want to move on quickly to another story because we've literally get no time to stop today because there's so much to get through since we've been away. You know, it fascinates me how much news there is from the world of tech these days. There was a story that we would have spent a lot of time on, I guess, over the past couple of weeks just before Christmas and just sort of during the Christmas period and New Year. And that was Apple's announcement and admittance that they do, in fact, slow down iPhones that are older. Now, this is something we've all thought of. Some of us have thought it's a joke. Some of us have made jokes about it. But it turns out to be true. And apparently it's all to conserve battery. Now, I'll come to Sean in a moment, who I can only imagine is seething. But, Tim, what do you think about this? Is this big news for you? Does this shock you? Are you concerned by it?
I'm definitely not concerned by it, especially after Apple came out and fully explained in their apology release, explaining how and why this happened. Obviously, this is something that could be concerning, especially for you know people that have been saying for years, "Oh, Apple slows down their phones every year just to make you buy a new one." I don't think that that's fully true, and Apple tried to explain that. So in that regard, it's not concerning to me because I understand why they did it. What was concerning is maybe the way they handled it or maybe not handled it. Apple typically isn't a company who's going to come out and say, here's a flaw, here's what we're doing to fix it, and here's what's going on. They don't usually tell us those kind of things. People like to have an Apple product because it's just taken care of, that it's just taken care of behind the scenes, and they don't have to worry about those things. In this case, however, I don't think it would have hurt them to come out and say, hey, by the way, because of the actual nature of how a lithium-ion battery works, how it degrades over time, it could cause your phone to be damaged or restart or shut down. And so we're going to go in and slow down the processor a little bit to make that not happen. If they had somehow found a way to explain that in a nice, easy way earlier, they could have avoided, I think, a lot of problems with the press and the things that they've been going through. But because they didn't find a good way to explain that sooner, that's obviously caused this to be a bigger issue than maybe it should have been.
Okay, Sean?
Well, as you said, Stephen, I love this story because it annoys me in two different ways. Okay, so first off, you got the conspiracy theorists have been saying for years, embedded obsolescence. You know, they've been doing this and slowing down the old ones for years, so you'd buy a new one, like Tim said. I don't believe that because forever I've been saying, no, that's not true. They wouldn't do that. And then it comes out, this story comes out, and everyone goes, see, I told you. But the reasoning is actually sound. Yes, like Tim said again, it makes sense. The batteries don't last forever. So if your battery doesn't pass a certain health check, then it will slow down the processor, throttle it, so you will get better performance. Makes total sense. But the other side I'm annoyed at, Apple. If they had simply come out and said that, gave you an option, explained what they were doing, there would not be an issue. But as ever, the way that Apple work, they don't tell you anything. It's all behind the scenes. And then it's found out, made public, and everyone loses their mind. So I understand why they've done it. But Apple, it just shows you need to be more open and there wouldn't be these problems at all.
Am I the only one that just isn't concerned or worried about this or even angry about it? I think it's a really sensible thing. I agree, perhaps maybe they should have announced it a bit more. I don't think it really matters at the end of the day. I mean, my iPhone 6 Plus, which I was telling you about before, a good few weeks ago, we were talking about how it was just not behaving itself at all. Well, yes. This is obviously why. Now, I can take it into the Apple Store now, and for £25, at least until I think it's end of the year or mid-year or something, I can go in and I can, you know, get a new battery in it, and apparently that will make all the difference. So, you know, 25 quid gets me a new phone, essentially.
Which is the price it should be anyway. The charging £80 for a new battery is ridiculous anyway. If it's £25, everyone would change the battery all the time. I don't know why this is going to be a one-off.
But it is a business. That's what businesses do. Businesses are out to make money. They're not out to service your old. I mean, you know, it's like the thing about washing machines. I remember my mother saying to me, oh, you know, I used to have a washing machine that lasted me for 800 years. And I said, well, that's great. But if that was the case, if every device you bought lasted 800 years, no one would ever buy anything.
No, yeah, but I'm sorry, you're still making a profit on £25 battery replacement. They're still making a profit on that. The fact that it's £80, oh, okay, yeah, I'll give you that one. Maybe you're right, but it just annoys me that.
I think he just said I'm right, Tim.
I believe he did, absolutely. We have to mark that.
It's out there, you can't take it back. Well, look, it's a story that we could talk about for days, I'm sure. We would have given it a lot more time had we had the time over Christmas, New Year, but we are back this week and we have got so much to fit in. And speaking of getting fit, and joining us on our first show of 2018 is Claire Porter. Happy New Year, Claire.
Happy New Year, everyone.
It is lovely to have you back on the show in 2018. And I think a really good start to the year is well, as we always do at the beginning of any year, is talk about getting fit. And all of us want to do it. Some of us manage it. Some of us don't. I'm not going to point any elbows in this room. But let's just say I'm not going to point them. If I point one at Sean can easily point an elbow back at me because correct. We're not very good at this. But what I was interested in was, before we get into your picks, you had put something out on Facebook, actually, a question, because Sean had mentioned on the show that he was keen to get fit, and one thing he wanted to do was find accessible gym equipment. That was the thing you were after, wasn't it, Sean?
That's right, yeah. Something I can use, and actually, more importantly, get the information off or control the machine.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the problem, is these rowing machines and these treadmills and all of these bikes now, they've all got technology built into them, but how accessible is it? Well, you got some answers, Claire, didn't you?
I have, yeah. I got two really good ones, which I'm going to read out for the benefit of anybody who's in a similar situation. So the first one that I've got is about the equipment, and they've put that the Techno Gym line are accessible, but they're quite expensive. The Wahoo Kicker is amazingly accessible for bike training if you want to do that. And then the second one that I've got, again a really good one, is about the rowing machine, which is called the Concept 2. It's very accessible when connected to the right monitoring screen. That can then be connected to a computer and statistics viewed accessibly. It's a faff, but it works quite well. And you can also rent to buy it if you don't want to buy it outright straight away.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, lots of interesting ones in there. I mean, the Techno Gym sounds quite good because it gives you multiple options. The Wahoo one for the bike. Now, if I'm right in thinking, that's the one that you can connect any bike into, and it basically gathers data on your smartphone. And again, all of that data would be accessible if that was the case. And that's quite incredible. The Wahoo, which I think we'd all be shouting Wahoo if it's accessible. and the Concept 2...
I must admit, there is another way you can do it as well if you don't want to get your phone out. And that is, of course, you know, if you have an Apple Watch 2, do your workouts on that, but yeah.
Yes, that's true. That's very true. The Concept 2, though, you're talking about, or one of your Facebook people was talking about...
Rowing Machine, yeah.
That's quite an expensive device. I remember looking at those, they're about £1,800. They're not cheap.
What price do you put on fitness, Stephen?
Just after £1,800.
But yeah, good ideas in there, certainly. But we're going to move back to budgets. And I believe the budget's been increased to £150.
It sure has.
Somebody's clearly above my head made that decision. But yeah, your three picks then under £150 this week are all focused on, I guess, getting fit, but maybe new year, new
exercise,
you.
Exercise, yeah.
Exercise, yeah, all that stuff. All right, what's your first one?
Okay, so the first one is actually an app which I reviewed quite a few months back now, and this is called Simply Yoga. It's available both for Android and iOS. The price for Android is $3.99, and for iOS it's $4.99. This includes a total of 6 ready-made workouts, which include level 1, 20, 40 and 60 minute workouts, and level 2, 20, 40 and 60 minute workouts. It is great for both women and men, and it's very accessible with clear audio instructions to guide you step by step through the yoga poses. And it also includes the option to create your own custom workouts. And for both the Android and iOS, it has free versions. So if you don't want to buy it straight away to maybe find out that it's not for you, you can try the free versions. But with those, you wouldn't get the option to create your own workouts, and you're going to get the level 1, just the easy workouts.
And you've used this kind of thing before, haven't you? You're into yoga.
I use it every single day. It's really, really good because you can actually set reminders on it. So say, for example, I mean, mine's 6:15 every night. So at 6:15, I'll get a little notification saying time for your yoga. And that is really motivating. And then I can just pick a workout after that and just open the app and pick a workout.
Yeah, I've used this one as well. I've got to say, it's amazing. It just helps with flexibility. I use it every day. I'm forever in the reverse lotus position. And I've got to say, works fantastically. I've never felt better.
Have you gone into a tree yet?
I've walked into a tree. I've never gone into a tree, no.
I think we just found the flaw in that particular statement from Sean. Lawyers are standing by to check the validity of that statement, but I think fake news.
I made it up. I've never used it, but it sounds good.
I think it sounds like fake news. Right, what's number two on your list, Claire?
Okay, number two, sticking with the yoga theme, I suppose, is the Rise Fit Portable Yoga Mat Kit for Travel, and it is from the place which begins with A and ends in N, and it sells everything. So, you know the one I'm talking about there.
I do, yes.
This one is $43.87, and it's a seven-piece set bundle, which includes a foldable yoga mat, two firm yoga blocks, one yoga strap, a stretch band, a non-slip yoga mat towel, and a handy bag to carry it all in. What do we think of that?
Now, do you need this equipment to do your yoga?
Well, they recommend that you do, because, it's a safety thing, I suppose. Because otherwise, if you're just on a hard floor, just a carpeted floor, you can injure yourself quite easily. Slip.
I suppose so.
You know, I mean, a yoga mat is quite a good grip, so you know you got less of a chance of slipping, and obviously, you know, having a long term injury. So yeah, people do recommend using. I mean, if you don't want to get the full bundle, even if you just get something as basic as a yoga mat, that's going to be better than nothing. The blocks and things like that are people who maybe struggle or they're maybe beginners. And they want to have that little bit more of a physical support, or if you maybe have things like arthritis and physical problems. So it's going to help you with that as well.
Excellent.
Yeah, it all sounds good. I have to say, me and yoga are not exactly best of friends at the moment, but maybe one day, you never know. Right, what's number three?
Okay, number three, going away from the yoga theme, if you want to put walking into your exercise routine, and into your everyday life and count that as exercise, you might want to know that there is a talking pedometer out there. This is from Cobalt, and it is $9.95. You enter the average length of one step, then when it's clipped to a belt or pocket or carried while you walk or run, this device will tell you how far you have travelled. What do we think of this?
Now, I like pedometers, because this is funny, because you get these built in everything, Apple Watches, Fitbits, and even, you know, specific devices like these. And you think, well, why would I possibly...
I think the iPhone does it as well. Sorry, the health app, that supposedly counts your steps, but I'm not sure how it does that, because before I got my Apple Watch, it still did it anyway.
It does, that's right. Yeah, depending on the model, yeah, it will do. But it does make a difference when you start keeping track. It's a bit like watching your diet, watching what you eat. It does make a difference when you start keeping a record of things. So yeah, I like this.
I must admit, I mean, there is this thing of, you know, people getting themselves onto these programs where you've got to do, I don't know, 10,000 steps a day, or somebody might do a charity thing where you've got to do 20,000 steps a day. So I think it's really good for things like that.
Yeah.
As well, if you want to keep track.
Yeah, I mean, all these things are great. And I just think, you know, it's all about not just fitness. I mean, fitness is obviously important. But I think for all of us, you know, getting out and about as much as we can. I mean, that's something that a lot of blind people tend not to do.
We struggle.
Yeah. And if you can do something that, you know, whether you need to be fit or not, you know, getting out there and actually doing something can make you feel better. And sometimes technology like this can help you and push you along a wee bit to make you do it. Now, a really good bunch of suggestions. I have to say, I'm absolutely shattered at after that conversation. But, you know, I really am glad you brought that up. And thank you for doing that on our first show of 2018. Thank you, Claire.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks, Claire.
Now it's time for this.
News from the internet.
Oh, Stephen, that's new. I like it.
It is. You know, that cost me an absolute fortune.
Someone's had a busy Christmas.
Let's just say bargain bin. That's all I'm saying.
blew the entire Tech Talk budget for all of 2018.
Yeah, that went on it. That was it. There's one more, actually. There's one more coming up. See if you can spot it later. Right, we've got lots of news, as you can imagine. And the first thing is CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, which is taking place in Las Vegas this week. Now, as we record this program, it is ongoing. And one of the things that I love about this is that there's just such a constant feed of news and stuff that comes out of it. So we are going to try and keep on top of that for you. And on next week's programme, when it's all over and the dust has settled, we'll have much more to tell you on CES. But right now what I want to do is just give you a bit of an overview as to what actually happens at CES, what it is, and what we are looking for this year. So, what is CES? Well, it's the biggest tech show on Earth and takes place every January. This year, it runs from the 9th to the 12th. The show sees firms from around the globe descend into the halls of the Las Vegas Convention Center, as well as other locations around Sin City. The big topics at CES this year, well, it includes the same as last year. Huge TVs, self-driving cars, and more wearables than you can fit on your body. And even something for us blind and partially sighted folk. But first, let's talk about VR and AR. Last year, virtual reality was all the rage, with lots of excitement about the new way to enjoy games. But that's perhaps where the interest also began to fall away, as since the launch of the HTC Vive, the Oculus Rift, and the more consumer-friendly PlayStation VR, there hasn't been much of a divergence from gaming. And that's where AR comes in. Augmented reality became very popular last year when Pokemon launched the Pokemon Go game on the iPhone. Since then, we've seen all kinds of apps that use computer vision, from ways for us to decorate our selfies with silly virtual objects, all the way up to apps that let blind people know what they're looking at. Seeing AI is the best example of this so far. It's important to remember, though, that CES is the place for us to see new ideas and prototypes. Not everything that is debuted at the tech event comes to market, but it does show us what the tech companies are thinking. So, while our phones can continue to handle the low end of augmented reality, you can expect to see some far-out designs of goggles and glasses that will show us where this path might take us one day. Electric cars and semi-autonomous vehicles are on show at CES this year, but the chat is more about the tech that powers them than the vehicles themselves. The biggest speech on the topic will come from Ford's new CEO, Jim Hackett, who makes his first high-profile appearance after he was picked to succeed former CEO Mark Fields. Aside other car tech companies showing off their latest designs, there's also continued escalation in the arms race between Uber and Lyft. Last year it was all about the Uber helicopter, this year it's all about real rides in semi-autonomous cars. But it won't just be about cars. The show floor and, no doubt, the car park will be full of smart scooters, weird skateboards and other ways, new ways, for us to be more mobile while being less mobile, I guess. There are more TVs on show this year at CES. This time around, it's all about HDR. Now, to the non-techies like me, that means high dynamic range, which I had to look up, I admit. Basically, we're talking again about more and better definition of screens, which can make a difference to some of us partially sighted people. Not all of us, to be fair. Now, prepare to yawn as I tell you that we will also be seeing 8K televisions, new OLED models, and advanced HDR. If that all sounds like gobbledygook to you, well, you'd be right. Wearables tech is the most exciting bit about CES this time around. The reason being that this is the year that wearables will get serious about health. From GPS watches to brain headbands to smart underwear, yes, you heard me correctly, there is approximately 63,000 square feet dedicated to health and fitness tech. Interestingly, there's no show this year from the likes of Fitbit and Polar, who are more likely to hold their own events later in the year. The type of tech on show includes connected blood pressure monitors, medical alert devices designed for older people, gluten sensors, fertility monitors, and sleep trackers. Now, as these physical devices connect to smart tech like Amazon devices and smartphones, this could be a very interesting time for blind and partially sighted people like us, who might be able to use this technology, assuming, of course, their apps are accessible. It's the year where Samsung and Google are set to take aim at Amazon's Alexa with their own personal assistants. Smart assistants are becoming increasingly popular since their price dropped to a level that has become affordable to most people in 2017. Not only that, their setup is a lot easier than perhaps it might have been a few years ago due to simple smartphone setups. Also, with more of us using smartphones and built-in assistants on them, we better understand how we can use the tech. But this year, it's not just about the smartphone or the smart assistant device, it's about the other tech we connect to it. Last year, we saw a slew of smart bulbs, power sockets, speakers, doorknobs, and more. This year, we are seeing companies continuing to expand the smart home reach to new types of devices. We are also likely to see companies offer smart tech that will work with multiple devices, as most manufacturers probably don't want to get caught up in the war between Apple, Google, and Amazon over who controls your home. Now, speaking of Samsung, aside from the new TVs, the smartphones and the smart white goods, they will also be showing off some concepts they are working on. In particular, they are showing off Relumino, glasses which could help people with vision problems see images clearer when reading a book or viewing an object. The Relumino app was launched at Mobile World Congress last year, but the glasses were subsequently developed to use the tech more comfortably and discreetly. The smartphone processes images from videos projected through the camera of the glasses, and the processed images are then floated into the display of the Relumino glasses to help the wearer see things better. Now, there's lots more medical tech to come at CES, and we will keep you posted on all of it. It's fair to say that CES isn't what it used to be, mainly because the big players now hold their own events throughout the year and don't announce as much new tech as they used to. Samsung seems to be the only exception to this. My one to watch, though, is the new Dell XPS 13-inch laptop. It's been slightly redesigned and is thinner, lighter, and just looks lovelier. It's gone proper premium this time as well, and it's available in light grey aluminium with a carbon fibre interior or a rose gold finish with white woven glass. Ooh, it even comes with its own leather sleeve. As for ports, it's got two new Thunderbolt 3 ports, one's for charging, a secure lock slot, a micro SD card slot, and mini display port. The near bezel-less infinity edge display, which means there's no border around the edge, is available in both 1920 by 1080 and 3840 by 2560. In other words, nearly 4K. Now, for those of us who had the 2016 version, you might remember the bottom-mounted webcam, also known as the nose cam, because of its odd placement at the bottom left of the screen. Well, it's back, and that is the only downside to what looks like a lovely laptop. CES 2018 runs until the 12th of January, and I'll have more coming up on the next Tech Talk with even more news from the Big Tech Show.
Okay, Stephen, thanks for that. Now, I want to talk about the Dell XPS 13. Didn't you have one and say it was terrible and sent it back?
Yes.
So, are you looking out for this new one?
Yes. I'll
tell you
why.
That makes total sense.
Yeah, because, do you know, I liked elements of the Dell XPS 13 that I had.
Right.
But this new version, it's lovely. I mean, it's like proper lovely.
Well, hang on. You can't say it's proper lovely. I think you said it didn't work very well, the one you had. So if the innards, it may look lovely, but it doesn't do what you want it to do.
They'll have fixed it. They'll have fixed all the problems.
All right.
It'll
of course
all be better.
Will.
Yeah, that's how it works. Didn't you know that? It's going to be so much better. So I'm looking forward to that. That's where my £1,400 this month is going. It's already out. This is what I love. You can go on the Dell website and get it now. So on you go, guys. But no, it's a really, really good one. And I hope it's not garbage. I really hope, because that would be really annoying if it was. But we shall see.
Well, yeah, I would love to pick one up. They are very nice. I mean, just for the portability of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, let's go on to some other news then. Just a few headlines to go through. Echo Show, that is the Amazon Echo device, which has a screen on it, and also the Fire TV, loses YouTube, which is a bit of a shame.
It's more than a shame. It's a disaster for Amazon.
Well, it isn't the best. Yeah. I mean, that's a bit of a bit of a kick, isn't it? I mean, you know, those devices, they really lend themselves to that platform, and yet, you know, such a visual platform that YouTube needs, and you can't now get it on Amazon devices. Is that the same on the Kindle tablets as well? Kindle Fire?
I don't know. I would assume so. There is talk they're taking it off the Amazon Fire TV sticks as well, but I mean, the breaking news is that Google, they've been having talks, obviously, about this. Google have got them over a barrel, to be basic about it. But Amazon have now agreed to sell the Chromecast devices on their websites, on their, you know, through Amazon. So it looks like this may be reversed.
Okay, well, that would be interesting. Although, you know, as they always say, when God closes a door, somebody opens a window. I remember that classic phrase from The Sound of Music, which I've been watching over holidays. Well, you know, they lost YouTube, but they gained Firefox. So there you go. Fire TV stick in particular got the Firefox browser. I hope that the Fire tablets get Firefox as well, or basically any browser that isn't that silk thing that's on there, because it's awful.
Yeah, anything would be better than
that.
You
know what? I've got to be honest with you. I haven't used my Amazon tablet. I haven't used my Amazon Fire TV stick in a long time. It's getting to that stage now where it's becoming, you know, drawer fodder. So,
oh dear.
The audio description when it came onto the Amazon TV stick, I thought was going to be fantastic. It's just so hard to find anything that it's practically useless, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's not just that, and we're going to get to the emails later, but a lot of people saying, you know, having real issues getting access to apps on there as well.
Yeah.
I must admit, that's a bit of a problem that, you know, if you're going to go down the route of accessibility, you've got to get down it pretty quick. You know, once you've opened the door, you've got to give someone a reason to go in. I'm a bit concerned about this one because, you know, the Fire tablet's one thing. I think on the whole, it's a fairly accessible device. I like the voice on it. I think it's in some cases a nicer leisure device than the iPad. That's how I use it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I agree. The Fire TV, I've had issues with. If you're using Prime Video or you're using Netflix, it's fine. But if you want to use iPlayer or 4OD or whatever it's called this week, or ITV Now or whatever, then, you know, it's not going to happen because
you're just
going to get WebView all the time, and that's going to drive people insane like me. But, you know, I do hope they get YouTube back. That would be nice. Tim, have you used much of these devices? Do you use any of these?
I don't use the Echo Show, and I don't have an Amazon Fire Stick, but I do talk to people that have them and have used them, and I know that they are going to miss having YouTube on there. And I mean, this isn't anything new from Amazon. That we've seen them do this with negotiations with Apple in the past, and bringing their products to to the App Store and to Apple TV, and so they're just now doing the same thing with Google. And hopefully, like you say, it'll come back, because YouTube really is something I think that, as you said, lends itself to the Echo Show and to the Fire Stick and all the other Amazon products. So I can't see it not being there for very long.
Okay, a couple of other headlines then. Not much to say on them other than what they are. Tidal, the music app, which is for people like me who are complete audiophiles, who love to listen to music in as clean and as uncompressed a sound as possible and pay a pretty price for it. Tidal, the app, has launched on Android, which is good. I'll be interested if anyone out there is using it and how accessible it is. It wasn't too bad when I used it on the iPhone. I'll be interested to hear people's thoughts on the Android, but it does allow you to listen to CD quality music. If you're not sure what all that means, well, basically Spotify, Apple Music to a degree, and other services tend to reduce the quality of the music so they can get the music to you quickly so you can stream it better. But, you know, that often means you find that some songs don't sound quite as good. They sound a bit more watery than perhaps you might have remembered from a CD. Well, Tidal sorts that problem out. Doesn't have as big a catalogue as the other guys, though. But, you know, it's an option out there. And wasn't it Jay-Z or something like that that started that one?
Yeah, nobody cares. Yeah,
I care.
Those days have gone. When you used to set up the hi-fi speakers and just sit in that particular spot, nobody cares. We're talking about mono Bluetooth speakers and everything. No one's bothered anymore. It's all about how much music you've got. I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm just saying that's where we're at.
Your middle name is now No Standards.
I've never had standards. How dare you?
Samsung are bringing out their Bixby speaker. That's due out this year. Of course, the HomePod is due out this year as well. I have to be honest, the Samsung Bixby thing, it feels a bit too late to the party, but it might be incredible. It might beat them all. I don't know.
We'll have to wait and see. It does. I was going to say it feels a bit crowded, but absolutely not. We've got two, I suppose, at the moment. So,
well, three, you know. Arguably three. You've got Google's Assistant, you've got the Amazon Echo device, you've got Siri, which will appear in the HomePod. I mean, it is available on Mac devices and on iPads and what have you. But, you know, this will bring a fourth one to the table. And arguably a fifth is coming through Cortana. But, you know, basically that's a personal assistant with a suit on. So I don't know if I fancy that too much. That's your business end. And that's good. That will have a place. And actually, maybe that's where we get some divergence in the market. So it's not just that we're talking about, you know, what the time is or what the weather is. It might be, you know, it's check your emails and, you know, do all those things.
I did see that Roku actually has said that they're going to start adding a voice assistant type program to their services as well. So Roku is actually going to dive into this. I don't know if it'll be available on other hardware devices outside of Roku itself, but they're another one that's throwing themselves into the ring with all of these. So it may start to get crowded, but I think right now it's still a fresh new market, even though Echo has been around for a couple of years. So I still think that there's an opportunity here.
And one more story that I am really pleased to tell you about. I had it in my notes here to tell you about the sad news that would be the end of free access to an upgrade for Windows 10 for us disabled people. But due to popular demand, Microsoft have announced that they will continue to allow anybody who's disabled to upgrade to Windows 10 for free until January 16th. So that's great news.
Well, is it? I suppose so. I mean, why? I mean, wasn't it December 31st that you were going to end this free update? Why extend it to January 6th? That seems weird. Just extend it. Make it never ending.
Yeah, but at some point they have to charge you for it, surely. I mean, I did see some people on Twitter saying, you know, come on, guys, surely we as disabled people should have access to this anyway. I think the problem is that, and I've seen this a lot as well over the past few months, websites and, you know, like Lifehacker and websites like that sort of saying, oh, look, here's a great way to get a free upgrade. You know, because anybody can tick the box and say I'm disabled, it kind of creates a grey area for Microsoft. They want people to pay for it. So I guess that's why. It's not so much that they don't want to do it for disabled people. It's just that there are too many non-disabled people jumping on board, and that might be the problem.
Yeah, I can understand that.
I've never silenced you so quickly in my life. That is it for the news. Now time for this.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Wow, Stephen, you've definitely gone all out in 2018. I guess there went the rest of the budget.
Yeah. It's all on quality, as you know. Quality, not quantity. That's what it's about with me.
I love them. I want more of those, Stephen.
I do.
Want
more, I do too.
Right, well, don't get too excited, because that is it. right, let's get to your emails then. That's why we bought a jingle. Email from Nadia, first up. Now, the NVDA tip that Sean suggested didn't work. Oh, Sean.
Oh, Sean.
Always the same. She
feel
does
like
say, though,
everyone down.
Well, you know, she does say she has a gut feeling she may need JAWS. She says it's great that NVDA exists, but she thinks it's way behind JAWS.
Okay, well, look, I'm not either way. Whatever works for you, works for you. So I would definitely try the JAWS 40-minute demo out. Why not? You've got nothing to lose. NVDA, I did double-check this. I've recently set it up on a new PC using a desktop layout keyboard, and yes, the NVDA key, which is either caps lock or insert, and the down arrow. Now, I did say hit it twice before. You don't need to hit it twice. It's just once. NVDA and down arrow will read from wherever your cursor currently is all the way down to the end of the text.
And that I should, yes, and you're absolutely right to say that, because I didn't tell anybody what the tip was.
Yes.
Because I didn't want to embarrass you too much, Sean.
No, that's right.
But it was about reading all the content. So basically like a read-all, like on a, you know, a Mac, it's the VO key A, and then it would do that, and it's insert down on JAWS, you know, so
yeah,
that,
or
that
two
tends
finger
to
swipe down on an iOS device.
Yeah.
But yes, I tried it inside a document, so it does definitely work in a text document. I tried it on web pages, it works. So I don't know if you know where you're trying to do it, but I did double check it, and I double checked the documentation, and that is definitely the keystroke. So yeah, I am a little confused. Maybe if one of our listeners knows any better, then they can email us.
More than likely. TechTalk@rnib.org.uk is the email address. Thanks, Nadia, who's also, by the way, looking forward to another year of Tech Talk, and we're glad you're here.
Thank you.
Callum's been in touch. He says, recently came across this podcast, finding it great. Phew! He says, I describe myself as a tech geek, yet he says he's found this show has given him some useful tips. That's what it's all about. His thoughts on seeing AI, as requested. We did ask for your thoughts on seeing AI over the past few weeks. He said, I was excited when it arrived and found it fantastic. The barcode scanner was the one he was most looking forward to, yet Callum has found it to be the least successful. Lots of you saying that. He suggests once its database has more images in it, that might improve it. He has used the short text feature most of all, from reading envelopes to reading cooking instructions on food packaging. He says, big thanks to Microsoft for the app. Rebecca's been in touch as well. She says, I haven't been listening long, but it's now on her favourites list and is a highlight of her week. Well, hello, Rebecca.
Lovely. Thank you, Rebecca.
I hope that's the case after this programme. Rebecca says, our passion for helping others empower themselves is evident, which is a lovely thing to say. She says, however, I couldn't help but smile at Tim's remarks about Trump. Rebecca isn't a fan of Trump, but is a fan of non-profits like RNIB, APH, the American Printing House for the Blind, of course, and businesses owned by blind and low-vision users. She says that there are times when these agencies can do a better job than governments because they are more involved. She wants to point her attention to Mystic Access, which is available at mysticaccess.com. She says, though based in the US, they offer a lot of tutorials that you can purchase online and offer customized training as well. And on the point of seeing AI, Rebecca says, Microsoft have definitely put other access tech vendors on notice, and she hopes other access tech companies incorporate handwriting. She's still using the Perl camera, though it's easier to, because it's easier to align documents for the moment until she gets a portable stand for her phone. And Rebecca notes her old friend Braille and is pleased to report that she has had a chance to use the Orbit Reader 20. While editing without cursor routing buttons takes a bit of getting used to, the Braille quality and device size are great. She bought it from someone else who bought it at one of the blindness conventions in the US.
So from someone else through someone else. It's how did she get one and we can't? It's ridiculous.
Well, she's bought it from about five people and I haven't even got it in this country. So I don't know. It's supposed to turn up. We will hopefully see it at some point. Who knows? I want to try and get a couple more emails in before we go. Email in from Alan who says, Happy New Year. Happy New Year to you, Alan.
Happy New Year, Alan.
Happy New Year to you.
He's been listening to our podcast for a while now and is really enjoying hearing from the team about all matters tech. Alan says it makes such a difference to know that everything we talk about is relevant to the visually impaired community compared with conventional tech information, which you have no idea if it would be useful for us or not. Alan has passed on some of the information that we used this week to talk about Apple's announcement that they do in fact deliberately slow down iPhones. Who knew? Well, thanks for that, Alan. However, he also asks in his email about using Firefox and JAWS. Major problems, of course, end of last year. What version should he be using is his question. Well, I found avoid it like the plague, if I'm honest, but what about you guys?
Well, it's interesting. So Firefox, with their recent updates, the way they're using the accessibility APIs, it slowed it. It just makes it a real drag to use any screen reader with Firefox. They do have available a special version. I think it's called the Firefox ESR or ERS. I can't remember. I think it's ESR, the Extended Security Release or Service Release. And this, if you look for that one, Google it. That one does work with the screen readers. That one will get the latest update, so you will be covered for things like Meltdown and Spectre. But it also works with the screen readers. So that's the one you need to look out for, Firefox ESR.
Okay, well, finally, Alan says that he heard us mention that Tech Talk has two podcasts. Yes, it does. We have Tech Talk episodes and Tech Talk features, Alan, which includes even more. Find them on iTunes using those names or just search for RNIB Tech Talk. Now, I wanted to quickly throw in this one from Billy Burrell. He got an Amazon Fire Stick for Christmas. Merry Christmas to you, Billy, and happy fire sticking. But he's having problems. He's having problems that he's hoping we can help him with. Now, we did actually touch on this earlier. He doesn't have Amazon Prime or Netflix subscriptions, but he has downloaded the iPlayer from BBC, ITV Hub and the My5 apps using VoiceView, the built-in screen reader. He says he can access everything on the screen that relates to Prime Video and all the categories, but as soon as he goes into the Player app, for example, all it says is WebView and then silence. Am I doing something wrong, he asks.
No, absolutely not. This is a bugbear. This is purely down to the accessibility of the app on that system. As we said earlier, you know, Netflix seems to work fine, but it is these third-party apps that it does seem to be let down, and I do find it really annoying. Stephen, you seem to use it more than I do. Is this a big issue?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, it's every app, basically, bar any of the Netflix and Prime content. And I find it a bit bizarre.
It's annoying, but hopefully it will get better. I mean, they are doing great work lately, Amazon.
Yeah, they are.
It's just slow.
It is slow. And it takes. And I guess it does take time to sort all these things out. But Billy does say, though, he's happy to subscribe to Prime Video or Netflix, but has concerns over the number of audio-described Amazon shows and is also concerned he will experience the same problems with VoiceView. Well, our experience is that with Prime and Netflix, you're okay. But as Sean said earlier, getting access to what is audio-described on Amazon is, well, it's like a lottery. You know, you might win it, you might not. And the chances are you probably won't. Whereas with Netflix, there is an audio description menu that you can go to and it will let you look at all the content that's AD specific there. It's just one of those things. I feel that Amazon are about a year behind Netflix, maybe even 2 years behind Netflix now on this one, and I just wish they would get on with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Netflix is amazing for audio description. I've got to say that, you know, a lot of the things I watch, I just watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I just watched the latest season of Black Mirror, all audio described and really good.
Well, that takes us, and thank you, by the way, to Billy for that email, and thank you to everybody for your email. Apologies if we didn't get to yours this week. We will get to it next week. Speaking of descriptions, that is where we go next with our top tips, our new segment here, where we're just going to sort of throw out a tip every week and suggest something that you might not know about, you might be unaware of, and it might help you along. And this one relates to Twitter and image descriptions. So I don't know about you, but I often have problems when it comes to people posting pictures on social media. I don't often know what the picture says. For example, it might be a meme and it has text written on top of the image and maybe at the bottom of the image, and it's a joke or whatever. And you know, lots of people get it and it's really funny and ha ha ha. But of course, us who are blind or partially sighted, well, we've no idea because we can't read it. Well, you can change that now thanks to a new feature in Twitter, and it's a setting that allows you to add an image description. So I thought I'd show you how to do it as a blind or partially sighted person as well, like me, because, you know, it's actually important that we add image descriptions as much as anyone else so that other blind and partially sighted people can get in on the joke. So I'm going to show you how to do this on an iPad or an iPhone. Basically, it's the same. First of all, you have to go into Twitter, into the app, and then go to the Me tab, which is usually roughly at the bottom right of the screen. Tap once.
Me tab.
Then double tap it.
Header photo.
So I'm now going to swipe right to find the settings menu.
Compose tweet. Profile photo. Settings and privacy. Button.
Now double tap.
Alert. Settings and privacy. Button.
So it's brought up an alert menu. I want to go into settings and privacy, and it's dropped me right on the link I want to go to, so I'll double tap.
Settings and privacy. Heading.
Now in here somewhere is a menu called accessibility. Swipe right to find it.
Done. Button.
Swipe again.
At Titch Talker Steve.
And keep swiping till we find it.
Account. Privacy and safety. Notifications. Content preferences. General. Display and sound. Data usage. Accessibility.
There is.
Actions available.
Okay, let's double tap.
Access. Settings and privacy. Back button.
Now, there are lots of options in here, and we will go through them on a future show. But for now, I want to find image descriptions and turn it on.
Accessibility done. Voiceover. Pronounce. Include. Read shortened. Interaction. Magic tap. Act. Vision. Increase color contrast. Improves legibility. Compose image descriptions. Switch button. Off. Double tap to toggle setting. Actions available.
Okay, so now I have to double tap to switch it on.
On.
And that's it. So now I'm going to find the Done button, which is near the top of the screen.
Include print voiceover. Done. Button. Header photo. Button.
So I'm now going to compose a tweet.
Header photo. Compose tweet. Button. Text field is editing. What's happening? Character mode. Insertion point at start.
And I'll just type in hello.
What's happening? E-L-L-O.
And I'll add an image.
Photo library.
Okay, so I'll pick a picture.
TFN photo asset image. 0x1c49edc0. Landscape. The 31st of December 2017 at 22:28.
So I don't know what that image is necessarily, but I do know it was taken on New Year's Eve, so it's probably okay to put up on Twitter. I hope. I'll double tap.
Selected. TFN photo asset image. 0x1c49ed.
And then I press the add button.
Add button.
Now I need to find how to add the description, so I'm going to swipe right and left to find my way around it. So I'll swipe right at first.
Tweet button.
Okay, not that one.
Stephen Scott Studio Microphone at Titch Talker Steve. Stephen Scott Studio Microphone. Hello. Text field.
That's what I've said.
Delete photo. Button. Add description to photo.
There we are.
Button.
Double tap.
Double tap. Describe this image for the visually impaired. Text field is editing.
And once I know what that image is, I would then add a description to it and then tweet it. Simple as that. There you go. That's our top tip for this week. Adding image descriptions. Simple as that. And it makes such a difference to blind and partially sighted people.
What a fantastic tip there. Yeah, it's so annoying when you go through these images on Twitter and then people don't put a description on there, and it is perfectly possible and usable. So fantastic. More tips to come, I hope. But is that us out of time, Stephen?
Yes, we're out of time. That is it for the first show back of 2018. I enjoyed it. I don't know about you guys. I had a good time.
Yeah, it was okay.
Always a good time.
Well, we're back next week with more. Join us if you can. And remember, keep in touch as well. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. The show is not the same without you. Get in touch and join the conversation. Tim, Sean, thank you as always.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We'll catch you next time on Tech Talk. Remember the podcast. Find it on iTunes.